What happens when the most powerful nation on Earth decides that reality is negotiable? When Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld casually dismisses legal boundaries on propaganda with a shrug? When you speak today, there's no one audience. This isn't a dystopian novel. It's the machinery of modern information warfare, operating in plain sight, yet invisible to millions. While we obsess over fake news on social media, a far more sophisticated deception has been running for decades. Governments and corporations manufacturing consent, one carefully planted story at a time. The question isn't whether we're being manipulated, it's whether we'll keep pretending we're not. Picture military briefings with PowerPoint slides reading "Villainize Zarqawi / Leverage Xenophobia Response, Official Pentagon Documentation of Psychological Warfare." During the Iraq War, U.S. officials planted fabricated stories in Iraqi newspapers, like "Iraqi Army Defeats Terrorism," while privately acknowledging no Iraqi battalions could fight independently. They deliberately inflated Abu Musab al-Zarqawi's importance to falsely link Saddam Hussein with 9/11, making the insurgency appear foreign-led when it was predominantly Iraqi. When a supposed Zarqawi letter appeared in the New York Times, General Mark Kimmett boasted it was the most successful information campaign to date. But it wasn't journalism. Psychological operations officers had fed propaganda to America's paper of record. The government tracked journalists' phone calls to hunt whistleblowers, with Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez threatening prosecution for publishing classified information. The message, "Participate in our narrative or become our target." This propaganda succeeded because corporate media, already compromised by its own complicity, had abandoned its watchdog role entirely. Why do certain perspectives dominate our news while others vanish? Corporate media suffers from what insiders call the access of evil, journalists trading truth for proximity to power. During Bush's first term, 69% of Sunday show journalists were conservatives, and 58% of guests were Republicans. Before invading Iraq, less than 1% of network experts represented anti-war organizations. This isn't mainstream media, it's extreme media cheerleading for war while marginalizing dissent. The New York Times NSA wiretapping story reveals this corruption's depth. In December 2005, they published James Risen and Eric Lichtblau's explosive report on illegal government surveillance. Buried in paragraph 9, the Times had sat on this story for a full year at the White House's request, withholding vital information until after Bush's 2004 re-election. Editor Bill Keller claimed administration officials had assured them that legal checks existed. This from the regime that had declared torture, preemptive war, and offshore gulags legal. The story only ran because Risen planned to reveal it in his upcoming book. Mahar Arar, a 33-year-old Canadian engineer, was detained at JFK Airport while changing planes. Interrogated for hours without counsel, he warned U.S. officials that Syria would torture him. They ignored him, chaining him to a CIA torture taxi and flying him to Jordan for beatings before delivering him to Syrian authorities. There, he endured brutal cable torture and imprisonment in an underground grave, a rat-infested cell 3 feet wide, 6 feet deep, 7 feet high, lacking sanitation. He survived this for over 10 months. After Canadian intervention, Arar was released without charges in October 2003. Years later, he still suffers nightmares and the terrorist label that destroyed his career. When he sued U.S. officials, including John Ashcroft, Judge David Trager dismissed the case, ruling that torture decisions belong to executive and legislative branches when national security is involved. This wasn't isolated. Extraordinary Rendition systematically kidnapped hundreds globally and sent them to torture-friendly countries. When courts refuse to act, citing national security, what difference remains between the West and the Third World? In 2004, FBI agents and Denver police in SWAT gear appeared at Sarah Bardwell's door, claiming to investigate suspected terrorists regarding upcoming political conventions. When Bardwell and her roommates declined to answer questions, agents took notes on items in their home and threatened more intrusive effort for their non-cooperation. 2 years later, she admitted, "We don't talk about politics anymore. There's been a toning down of everything we do." The chilling effect was complete. The Thomas Merton Center in Pittsburgh became an FBI international terrorism investigation target simply for opposing the Iraq War. Pentagon spies infiltrated a Quaker meeting house in Florida where activists planned to protest military recruiters. The most far-reaching program was NSA warrantless eavesdropping, a vacuum cleaner approach sweeping up innocent Americans' communications. AT&T whistleblower Mark Klein revealed secret eavesdropping rooms in Maine switching centers. Despite claims the program saved thousands of lives, virtually all NSA tips led to dead ends, with FBI agents joking that new tips meant more calls to Pizza Hut. By 2006, with 70% of Americans disapproving of Bush, the administration had spent $1.6 billion on advertising and PR between 2003 to 2005. They paid the Lincoln Group to plant propaganda in Iraqi newspapers while creating fake television news segments for American audiences. Government agencies produced hundreds of segments featuring pseudo-reporters delivering propaganda about Medicare and Iraq. The Government Accountability Office labeled these covert propaganda and declared them illegal, but the White House instructed agencies to ignore these findings. The administration also paid pundits directly. Armstrong Williams received $240,000 to promote No Child Left Behind. When real journalists became troublesome, they employed fake ones. Jeff Gannon, actually James Guckert, a male escort and gay porn webmaster, obtained White House press credentials and lobbed softball questions at Bush. Meanwhile, legitimate journalists like Maureen Dowd were initially denied credentials, while Helen Thomas, who had covered presidents since Kennedy, was moved to the back row. These efforts succeeded. A December 2005 poll showed 41% of Americans believed Saddam Hussein had strong links to Al-Qaeda, 22% thought he helped plan 9/11, and among U.S. troops, 90% believed their mission was to retaliate for Saddam's role in the 9/11 attacks. When surveillance chills speech and propaganda replaces journalism, what can one person do? Alice Walker, arrested protesting the Iraq War, offers wisdom. When you gather with all the other people who are just as small as you are, but you're together, that's where power begins. South African journalist Alistair Sparks identifies the problem. Journalists become embedded with sources, dependent on access, reluctant to challenge power. The solution isn't waiting for corporate media to reform, it's building alternatives now. Arundhati Roy urged Americans to confront empire. If you join the battle, not in your hundreds of thousands, but in your millions, you will be greeted joyously by the rest of the world. That chance remains. The static may be loud, but truth is louder. We see this in investigative reporting exposing corruption, viral videos capturing injustice, grassroots movements shifting discourse. Media isn't something that happens to us, it's something we create. By supporting independent journalism, questioning official narratives, and amplifying marginalized voices, we break through manufactured consent. Democracy's future depends on ordinary people seeking and sharing truth, one story, one voice, one act of courage at a time.